On today's episode of Hoops 360, the Final Four is set. What does South Carolina have to do to take down the big, bad UConn Huskies? What does UConn have to do to win back-to-back national championships? Plus, is Texas the best odds to take down Lauren Betts in UCLA? We get into that, plus so much more on today's edition of Hoops 360. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. The Elite Eight has officially wrapped up, and the Final Four is set. All 4-1 seeds will be represented in Phoenix. We've got number one undefeated UConn taking on South Carolina, a little rematch of the national championship game last year, and then a rematch of a game that we saw in November, UCLA and Texas, all battling for an opportunity to get to the national championship game. So let's get into it. I'm Caroline Fenton. She is Ice Young. Jordan Robinson is joining the party tonight as well. She's been doing some great breakdowns on Yahoo Sports all the past couple of weeks, all tournament long. So now we get graced by her lovely presence tonight on Hoops 360. So let's start there. The team that just punched their ticket, we're recording this podcast on Monday night, right after the game wrapped. The team that just punched their ticket to the Final Four, South Carolina taking on UConn, a rematch of the national championship game last year, a place that both of these coaches, both of these programs, both of these fan bases are oh so familiar with. Ice, what stands out from this matchup that we'll see in Phoenix?
Oh, I love this storyline going into it. Anytime we see Dawn and Gino on the same sideline, it's such a treat. To me, it's like, what is the scheme going to be for South Carolina is my thought. Like, with knowing how they lost last year and knowing how Dawn Staley's teams play this time of year, they're disciplined. They throw the ball inside. They play harass you defense. They try to get out in transition. Tessa is shooting the ball well. She finished the game today, knocking down a couple of threes, which if they have any chance of beating UConn, Tessa has to have a great game. She has to be knocking down shots from the outside. But I think my first thought is just in terms of the guards for this game, so many good matchups. Can South Carolina hold the guards of UConn? Like, can they really hold an AZ Fudd? Can they hold a KK Arnold? That is the question that I have going into it. And then on this flip side, is Taniya Latson about to show us why she led the Division I season last year in scoring? Could mm-hmm. she be the X factor that maybe hasn't yet been unleashed this season because she's been playing Gamecock basketball, but could become a superstar? I have my eye on the guards, Jordan. Would love to know what you're looking at into this one.
Yeah, I mean, we saw UConn be a little human in that Elite Eight game. We saw them get a little rattled. AZ Fudd, to me, that was by far her worst game. And we saw how bad it could be. She had turnovers. She wasn't hitting shots. And it was like, oh, okay, they can look bad. Like, I think this whole time we're like, oh, they're invincible. They're superhuman. But that made them look real. And when you have a team like South Carolina, who if they get out to a good start and UConn has these starts that they have been having, that's where it gets a little exciting, because we know what happened in the Final Four last year. We were all in Tampa. We were so excited for that matchup. And then it was not even close. And I think a lot of players like a Raven Johnson have not stopped thinking about that game. So how are they going to come out? And it really starts from the jump. That's what I'm going to be looking at. Who has the best start? Because that has been a key. We even saw in this last game, South Carolina didn't have a good start. TCU had hope. And I think for a team like this and matchups like this, you want to close that gap early. You want to, any hope, any idea that you can beat us, we need to diminish that fast. You mentioned Tessa Johnson for South Carolina not scoring this last game till the fourth quarter, and South Carolina was already up by 20 points. That's where UConn should be like, oh, crap. We thought if we contain Tessa, then we would have a chance. But now they have so many other weapons. And that's the problem with UConn. Their depth. That's always what gets them. They have so many weapons. They can get you from all angles. People coming in off the bench. This is something that they're going to have to stop. And I'm so excited to see that matchup of depth versus depth on the biggest stage.
Yeah, because it felt like the only time when UConn looked uncomfortable is when they were sped up. You know, we haven't seen them sped up all season. We've seen them play their tempo, their style, and it looked flawless. Even when they missed shots, it looks flawless. But against that stretch against Notre Dame, they looked sped up. And my thought was like, if this is Hannah Hidalgo out here, which we will talk about Hannah later and the greatness that we are getting to see in one of the best college basketball players ever to play the game. That I believe that's what she will be called when it's all said and done. But it is only Hannah out here playing defense like that. Mm-hmm. You know, imagine if all of South Carolina can decide to play an intense defensive effort like that without giving up easy looks. In the past, sometimes they have been too overzealous. And then when they get backdoored, when they get thrown over the top, it feels like UConn is getting easier looks. But Notre Dame, and a credit to Nielle Ivey, like that game was closer than I think any of us had planned. And yeah. Gino looked scared for a second. At one point, they put the camera on him on a sideline third quarter, and he looked a little bit like, you know, let me get this junk together. He was having flashbacks, Caroline. He was having flashbacks.
And I didn't want to be on the receiving end of a Gino Auriemma halftime. I'll just call it speech, for lack of a better word, maybe a pod-friendly word. And that Notre Dame game, I think it's really kind of a choose-your-own-adventure game, whichever way you want to look at it. Do you want to look at it from a UConn perspective of, you know, you've set this standard of perfection to the point that an 18-point win in the Elite Eight feels underwhelming? You set the standard to the so point right. that, sure, like, it's a Notre Dame, it's a six-seed Notre Dame team, but that's not a six-seed type of team. Like, that's one of the most electric basketball players in all of women's college basketball, and a Notre Dame team that is feeling themselves after taking down a three-seed, taking down a two-seed in the process. So you can look at it that way. Or you can look at it and say, this team that we thought was flawless maybe showed us just some cracks in the armor. Maybe this team that we thought was unbeatable, absolutely perfect, not a single flaw, might just have a couple of things that are vulnerable. Yes. So I'll ask you, I mean, this UConn team is comparable to last year's team, if not even better, both championship contending teams. Is this South Carolina team, the way they're constructed, the way that they're playing, are they in a better position to beat this UConn team than they were last year?
They are for two reasons. I love this question. They are for two reasons. The first reason they are is because a huge nucleus of this group experienced the BTA last year. So they are familiar. They understand and know what it feels like. And I think that's real. I think when you lose to UConn, you understand what it feels like. And you understand that they make it hyper aware of your weaknesses in areas where you aren't good. And so I think there's a standard that is met the next year when people lose to UConn. They're like, okay, well, now we've experienced losing to greatness. So now we understand what are the areas in which we need to close the gaps. The second reason I believe is that in order to win this time of year, you need good point guard play, you need shooters, and you need size. And I truly believe that South Carolina every single night has those three things, whether they make shots or not. They have size to compete inside, and they have depth to compete inside. So one person gets in foul trouble, Dawn is just bringing in another 6'6 off the bench. Like, they have size to be able to combat with that. They have Raven Johnson, who is a point guard veteran leader that understands what shots need to be taken this time of year and how to defend some of the best players in the country. 4 years going up against AZ Fudd. Come on, you know? Like, she's ready to have her number. So to me, those are the two reasons that I think they might have a chance at winning this game. But I'm with Jordan. The start of the game will tell us a lot. The start of the game will tell us a lot. If it looks like the Notre Dame game and at the half, it's a close game within 10 points, then okay, let's talk. Mm-hmm. Because Gino is one of the best at making halftime adjustments, but so is Dawn. So then it's about adjustments being made. The problem was when we saw this game last year, it didn't matter what adjustment you made at halftime. It was just gonna be. And that's you know, and Dawn we trust this time of year, but that's respectfully saying it didn't matter. So that's kind of why I believe it. I also will say, though, to keep an eye on Sarah Strong, I felt like when UConn was in that Notre Dame game and things started to get a little wishy-washy, Sarah started talking. Sarah was chirping. She was hitting bit. You know, she was really getting outside of herself a bit. And I'm clapping at my TV like, let's go, Sarah. Come on. Show us really who you are. So I feel like we've seen the mature like kind of shy. Sarah Strong was like a silent assassin. But when it got to, you know, chippy in that Notre Dame game, she got chippy. And I loved to see it.
Well, you could see that it wasn't the UConn standard. Like she was like, when she was clapping in the huddle or she was getting people fired up, it was like, we're not playing like we normally play. I don't know. They were probably up by 20 by that time. But still, she was like, we should be up by 40. We should be up by 30. Like, that was such a great point of their 18-point win. And we're like, wow, that was a close one. Like, they barely inked it out. Because we're all accustomed to this standard for UConn, right? And I love this storyline. Like, as we're sitting here talking, I feel like even on my podcast, the Women's Hoop Show, people were like, you're not talking about South Carolina enough. And I'm like, you're right. I kind of am just assuming that they're going to get to the Final Four again, that they're going to get here. And then now this is when we talk about them, because I don't have any worry about them getting to this point. But that's the same vibes as UConn. For Dawn Staley to get to this many Final Fours in a row, this is the standard now for South Carolina. And they know that getting blown out last year by this team with a lot of the same players, minus Paige Beckers, that's not how they want to go out. They don't want to go out two times in a row for Raven Johnson. I'm going to lose to UConn twice. Like, you guys are going to be the people that hold me from a championship 2 years in a row. That's not what she does. She is a winner. So I know that the whole storyline with South Carolina against Oklahoma was like, okay, Oklahoma was the only team that beat South Carolina in the SEC. Is that going to motivate them? And Dawn Staley said, losing doesn't motivate us. Like, that loss isn't the thing that motivates us. Us not playing to our level is what motivates us. And so that's what I think is going to be the mindset coming into this Final Four matchup. All right, we get another chance at this. There's a lot of things in life you don't get another chance at. Let's show them South Carolina basketball. Last year, that was not us. Don't let them judge us on that. Let's give them a run for it. And plus, Notre Dame showed us the cracks in the piece, showed us the cracks in the puzzle where we could exploit. Let's watch that game film, see what they were doing, and let's execute that. Let's be who we know how to be. So that energy, plus the excitement, plus the nervousness, plus all the things of your season being on the line, that's what makes for a really good matchup. So that's what I'm excited to see.
And you know Dawn Staley's playing the highlights from the national championship game all week lights. Long. She's at the low lights. Yeah, right. At breakfast, on the bus, team transportation. She's talking about it. She's bringing it up. And look, as she should, that's what every great coach and every great motivator is going to do, is get your team pissed off, because you're not going to let them do that to you again. Now, I did say that last year during the national championship game. I said, Dawn Staley's not going to get caught twice. That's exactly why I picked South Carolina to beat Oklahoma. Because I was like, I really, like South Carolina is a better team than Oklahoma.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen twice.
They're not going to get got twice by the same team. Sometimes that motivation can be palpable, intoxicating. It can make all the difference. Sometimes it just doesn't. Like, sometimes you just get beat by a team that's better than you. I'm not saying that that's necessarily going to be the case here, because I do think that this is going to be a wildly entertaining and back and forth and physical and fun matchup and kind of chess match between two of the most brilliant minds in this sport. But do have to point out, sometimes it doesn't always make the difference to be fueled by the bad taste in your mouth the last time that you saw a certain team or a certain coach.
100%. Yeah, it's I don't know. Y'all know I'm from Jersey, so I like getting my lick back. I'm here to get my lick back. If I'm UC, what I like about having all one seeds is everyone has a story. So we get to the UCLA side where they're playing Texas, which is the only team that they lost to this season. You get to South Carolina and UConn, and South Carolina's like, we were that close to a national championship last year, but we was there. And so it's like, I feel like it's like our team's going to get their lick back, as other teams going to tell them like, no, you still aren't on our level.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm just like looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be so good. But you bring up the matchup that we get, UCLA and Texas. Texas handed UCLA its only loss of the season when they played back in November. It's been a minute. But UCLA is doing the exact same thing. Corey Close is doing the exact same thing that I'm sure Dawn Seeley is doing to her locker room of, we won't let this team beat us twice. But also at the same time, we just saw Texas play an absolutely terrifying brand of basketball, beating Michigan 77-41. We're talking about a top 10 offense in women's college basketball. We're talking about a team in Michigan that scores 84 points a game, and Texas made everything difficult for them. Jordan, when you look at this matchup between UCLA and Texas, two teams that are familiar with one another, what stands out to you?
Texas looks really, really good. Like, what really I tell y'all,
it looks
good.
So good.
Like, I mean, I knew that Madison Booker was on a mission. I knew when we had our selection show, you know, I had them making it this far, but I didn't think that they would look this great. And when I mean great, like, they have been blowing everybody out. No, they haven't had a moment where they have looked human. Where we talk about UConn coming into this, they've looked flawless. But in the tournament, we've seen certain halves, certain quarters where, I don't know, Texas, flawless. Like, they have played defense. And what we said before, if they play defense like we know how they play, and they can score the ball on this level, they are virtually unstoppable. And that is exactly what we're seeing. We saw Madison Booker have a 40 piece earlier, but then it's still like, I don't think Jordan Lee has had her best game yet. Like, we still are on the precipice of her shooting lights out like she knows how to. So not everybody has had their best game yet, and they still haven't beaten everyone by almost 30 points. And they made Michigan look like not a two seed. I'll just say that. They made them look like you shouldn't even been in the gym with us. So they have all this confidence coming into the Final Four already. Then on top of it, oh, we got to play a team we already beat. Let's go. Like, it's not a new matchup. It's not a new scout. We just have to do exactly what we did the first time. Oh, I'll see you in the championship. Like, this confidence that they have has to feel so good. And I think, you know, comparing each Elite Eight games, UCLA had a okay start. They finished strong. Lauren Betts finished great. Kiki Rice looks absolutely incredible. I think she's playing her best basketball this year, but especially this tournament. So I'm excited to see the coaching. I'll say that. I'm excited to see Corey Close versus Vic Schaefer. Those adjustments at halftime, the scouting reports going in, what is the defensive scheme going to be on Lauren Betts? They held them to their 20 turnovers that first meeting that they played. What is the defensive scheme going to be? Are they going to try to do the exact same thing? Are they going to switch it up? That gets me really excited to see the coaching, the X's and O's, because that's what it's going to come down to. Superstars are going to be superstars. How are the adjustments going to be in the schemes? That's what's going to win this matchup.
See, listen, I agree with everything you said, but everybody ain't a superstar until they perform in the Final Four.
Okay. Fair enough.
You are not a superstar till you perform in the Final Four. And I am banking that one out of the four superstars we have playing in this game will not show up. And that's going to be the difference in the game. Either Madison Booker won't make shots, or Lauren Betts won't show up, or Kiki Rice won't make shots. But whatever superstar does not show up, Rory Harmon turned the ball over, whatever one doesn't show up, that team is losing. I think it's that simple. To me, it's two teams that are very similar in all the ways. They both share the wealth. They both defend like their life depends on it. They both own rebounding. They both have size inside. We know Lauren Betts is 6'7". Texas also has size over there, 6'6". We know that they have great guards that can score the basketball. Kiki Rice can get to her spots. Madison Booker dropped 40 two games ago. What are we talking about? Like, I feel like all the stars exist. The X's and O's make the difference. But I think if one superstar for one team can be taken out of their game, I think that's going to be it. Now, y'all know what I've been saying all tournament long. Praise the Lord and hook 'em horns.
Texas is your team.
I ain't playing with y'all because I knew they were going to look like this.
It was a great call.
I hate to be right. No, I don't. I love to be right. Because I just feel
burnt
like
Orn in her veins, people.
I do at this point. It took everything in me not to pack that color. But to me, no one can deal with their defense consistently and still get the shots that they want. That's the difference right now with Texas. I think there are other defenses across the country in which you could still generate good shots and it'd be against the best defense. Teams just do not do that against Texas. They just don't generate the shots that they want. And so that's a challenge for UCLA. I don't even think it's like them defending Texas. I think it's saying, can you operate and get into your offense like you know it should look and score the basketball? I also believe that the physicality is going to be at a different level for this game. Now, listen, y'all know I've seen UCLA up close and personal. I've seen them win by 50 points in the Big Ten Championship. Crazy. I'm here to tell you that I saw Texas today, and that physicality is different than the one that I saw in the Big Ten. I'm here to tell you that it's different. Mm-hmm. So I'm also curious if that's going to be the difference in this game. Like, is UCLA going to come in from the West Coast and be like, all right, we here? We going to punch? Or is Texas going to do what they've done all season, which is just continue to punch and, like, dominate in that way? But I have Texas winning this. I think it's going to be close. But I just think Texas is going to win. I think Vic Schaefer's team is there. I think they're there. I think they've got all the pieces. And honestly, I only think UConn could be the stumbling point.
Texas makes everything look so hard for whoever they play.
Terrible.
Like watching Michigan, it was like it hurt me just watching how labored they looked. It's a credit to Michigan.
It's a credit to Texas. They weren't even there. Like halfway through the first quarter ended, I'm like, were y'all? Did you guys even try? Like, hello, are you there? It just seemed like we were watching Texas highlights. Like
they were worn out.
Made them look like cones. That's tough.
Yes. They were worn out. They were exhausted, doubled over. They were worn out. Silas Swords was worn out. Olivia Olson was worn out. They just looked tired. I also tell you, too, like, what I also like about this matchup is, like, Texas has lost recently. You know, they were SEC champs, but they lost in the regular season. Like, they know what it is to be defeated. UCLA ain't lost in 5 months. Mm-hmm. What happens when you down 10 in a quarter? Do you really know how to respond? Because it's been a minute since that's happened.
Well,
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, go ahead, Jordan. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that because they mentioned that during the broadcast. And I think that was such a good point that they are 12-0 since that loss at Vanderbilt, since Vic Schaefer called them out about not having any heart. You know, their head coach calling them out in that way. Now, we saw that go a very different way when another coach did that. Tennessee. So for this to go in a very great way for them, I love that. Him saying that it brought us closer. Him saying that the team really saw how hurt he was because he knew that that's not how they play. That's not their standard, like we're talking about. That's not their level that they play. And they have been a complete different team on a mission since that loss. And I guess you can say that about UCLA. Like, they've been on a mission since their loss against Texas, but it's been a while. Like, even in a couple games ago, seeing stats like they haven't trailed by at halftime all season long. Like, they haven't had that adversity. And I think that is a real thing that you might need to have when you get to this point, because it's going to be adverse. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, I think them beating Duke was like what they needed.
Yeah.
I do think they battled. Mm-hmm. Yes, they battled some adversity. The first half, Duke had a great game plan. They came out swinging. They was looking good. They was looking like the Duke that I picked on my bracket. They were looking like the Duke that I picked on my bracket. And then in the second half, they looked like Duke. And they couldn't hit shots. UCLA weared them down for real, but they did, and they stuck in it. UCLA's depth, like when Angela Dugalic comes in the game, bro, mm-hmm. I'm scared. Mm-hmm. She comes into the game and I'm like, this is 6'4" European frame. Like, she can do just about everything, and she's so strong, and she plays with like a good moxie. I feel like they get better when she enters the game, but to me, she was the difference, like in the second half. And Duke just didn't, they ran out of steam. It probably was because they had such an emotional game the games before. Yeah. And obviously knocking out LSU and making a game winner.
Whatever.
Which was so sorry.
Whatever.
But it felt like they ran out of steam. And I think it was just the emotions of March. But I do believe that UCLA needed that adversity in the Duke mm-hmm. game to just know a little bit of what it felt like to have to push back, you know?
I agree.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you, because going back to our tournament bracket show, we talked about how it was so hard to trust UCLA for several reasons, and one of the reasons being they haven't lost. And go back, ask any coach how valuable a loss can be, what you can learn from a loss, the tape that you can watch when you lose a game, how a team comes together. Like, culture in a locker room is really easy when you're winning, because that just becomes your culture. Culture matters when you're losing. And that kind of culture comes to fruition in the biggest moments, the biggest stages, in the Final Fours, in the biggest moments of sports. Is that enough? Is getting kind of a wake-up call against Duke, is being down at the half to Duke, is that enough to do for UCLA what we felt like we were looking for, what we felt like UCLA needed in order to get a kick in the butt, a dose of reality, you know, a tall, cold glass of water for this team to be like, you can't just 6-7 your way to a championship? Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think so only because I watched their team documentary. I don't know if you guys have, but it was really good. And because this is a rare thing in college basketball these days, everybody yeah. came back pretty much. And they're using yeah. that.
They're like best friends.
I know. They love each other. And they're using yeah. that loss from last year, right? Like, that's what the whole documentary was. It was like, that getting to the Final Four for the first time in school history, the lights were too bright. And we all saw that. And once it got there, we were like, okay, you know, that's where that, I don't know if we believe them, comes in. They felt that. They talked about it. They had really hard conversations. And that's what this whole season was about, of like, we belong here. We deserve to be on this big stage. And we're all doing it together because it's the same people running it back one last time. All seniors, grad students, this is really their best and last chance to get a championship and go all the way. So you see that motivation. What I think, Aish, you bring up a really good point in that Duke game, because it could have went the other way. They could have folded. They could have yeah. ran up against that wall, saw Duke's defense, Duke's game plan, especially at halftime, and they could have folded. And then we all would have been sitting here being like, we knew it. We told you this is exactly what would happen, but they didn't. And they went like so far in the opposite direction and came out firing on all cylinders in that third quarter and made us sit up straight and say, oh, okay, UCLA, we see this. This is a mature team. And that's what really showed out. Not saying, you know, anything against Duke, but that maturity, that desperation of like, we are not losing here, that really propelled them through the rest of that game. And it was a difference. I think a UCLA team 2 years ago, even maybe early last year, that would have went a completely different direction. And so seeing that for me made me more excited to watch them go up against Texas or potentially be in the championship game, because I know that they have a little bit more fight in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They got a little more fight, Caroline.
A little bit.
It felt like a little bit of a breath of fresh air.
It did.
Yes. We've been looking for this. We've been yeah. waiting for this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I picked UCLA to get to the national championship game, and I felt so vindicated in that choice in my bracket, because I was like, yes, 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 that's it. That's what I've been wanting to see. I've been wanting to see you pissed off. So that was my UCLA-related question about this matchup, but I have a Texas-related question for you guys.
Okay.
I keep saying, and I think we've all kept saying, and we asked Rae Close this. She said the exact same thing. UCLA has a 6'7" Lauren Betts and nobody else does. And that point, done. Like, period, point blank, period. You have Lauren Betts, nobody else does. That is UCLA's secret weapon. I just saw Kyla Oldacre get 11 rebounds in 24 minutes and be like the defibrillator for this Texas team. You know, the things that paramedics use? That they're like, clear. She was that. And that entire Texas team in the second half. And it was like, whoa. Not that Texas even needed the spark plug, but Kyla Oldacre was it.
Yeah.
Kyla Oldacre is 6'6", and she is physically imposing in the paint. Is Kyla Oldacre the best matchup for Lauren Betts, not just in the Final Four, but the entire country?
Yes. I think 1,000%. To me, 1,000%. From a size standpoint, Kyla Oldacre is stronger, I believe, than Lauren Betts. And I would be willing to put half my bank account on it, which in this game, strength is important, right? Because post players fight for positioning before the ball is even in their area. And so you're talking about Lauren Betts that's going to consistently have to try and wedge Kyla Oldacre down somewhere, under something, to the side. I'm not sure what would be moving Kyla Oldacre. On the other side of that, I think Lauren Betts also has to deal with somebody who has the strength to score against her. Like, she can go through you in order to score. Everyone else has had to use shot fakes, step throughs, spins, this and that to score around you. No, Kyla can go through you. And that is how she prefers to play. She was our player of the game today for our Westwood radio call for Texas versus Michigan. And in speaking to her afterwards, our play-by-play asked her, you know, do you know how good you are? That there aren't many players in the country, if at all, that can guard you. And she was like, well, when you put it that way, like, yeah, so I don't even think she realizes, you know, how much of a monster she can really be. But what I know about her is that she was this same way last year. Last year is the same situation. Texas was in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight. And in one of the games she came in, was a huge factor off the bench, had a double-double. Talking to Vic Schaefer post-game, he's like, she's done this before. Like, they know that they can expect this from her. I think what makes this matchup beautiful with Texas is it's just not Kyla that you need on Lauren Betts. You still got to guard Brea Cunningham. You still got to guard some other inside presences. So I love that Kyla will be like the main size comparison matchup, but Lauren Betts is going to have to guard Kyla, who's stronger, and Brea Cunningham, who's maybe a bit quicker, you know? And both players play with a lot of size, a lot of physicality. It's 10 fouls between the two of you. So my only concern, for real, is that both of them have like 3,000 the first half. That's really my only concern. I think if we can get Kyla Oldacre to the second half, where she's going the second half with 2 fouls, come on. What are we talking about? Steak and potatoes. Steak and potatoes.
I wasn't going to say steak and potatoes, but I was going to say that Oldacre, we're talking about Oldacre, she comes off the bench. Like, Cunningham is your starting big. And I am Justice Carlton's number one fan. I am
I'm number two.
Obsessed with her. I love how she is everywhere. It could be the first 5 minutes of the game. She has a rebound. She has a block. She has an offensive rebound. She has a steal. Then she got a layup. Like, she's everywhere and scrappy and just one of those players that you want on your team and hard to guard, hard to plan for. Like, what is her scout? Just front her because you're going to have to run everywhere. She can shoot the three. She can shoot the mid range. She can clean up everybody's shots inside. Like, that's those type of players where you're like, yes, Jordan Lee, just shoot the rock freely because we have options to clean it up. So that's the issue when you're trying to go against Texas. Yes, we're going to bring Oldacre in off the bench to guard Lauren Betts, but she's going to have to get worn down by Cunningham, by Carlton, and then she's going to be huffing and puffing, and then she sees Oldacre checking in, and she's like, what am I going to do? There's so many options, and Texas is so big and long, and even Madison Booker, like, everyone's a matchup nightmare, and that's what makes them so hard. But the whole thing, like you said, UCLA's size has been what separates them and keeps them at the top. Now you have a team like Texas where they're like, okay, you got to pick something else because we match you there. It has to be something else. And that's going to be that differentiator. Who's going to shoot the three ball better? Who's going to take control of the ball? Like, it has to be something else because the size kind of cancels each other out.
Yes. What an opportunity for Lauren Betts. You know, we've talked about her WNBA draft stock and what this tournament could mean. And I feel like against Duke, it still looked like, you know, you're 6'7", over 6'2". Let me just grab the ball over top of your head, make a layup and, you know, run down the court. You ain't grabbing a rebound over Kyla's head. I'm sorry, but you're not. Not without coming down with a foul. Like, you're not. So I'm excited to see how she match up against someone who pound for pound is bigger than her, who's a bit stronger than her, but also is the same size as her. And the most important thing, guys, experience. Kyla has been here before. These lights aren't too bright. She saw it last year. She is a veteran. She's a grad student. So I love that this like inside matchup is going to be one, because I think come Final Four, everyone has a premier center. Everyone has a premier big. And so you care about that matchup. But because so much of what the Bruins do goes through 6-7 Lauren Betts, I'm excited to see if Texas just decides, let's neutralize that and we can win this game. Yeah. Let's neutralize that and we can win this game.
I love the point that you brought up about the WNBA draft, because this feels like the first year, at least in the last several years, where it feels like the number one pick is kind of wide open. Like, sure, we have this, like, we're talking about AZ, we're talking about Lauren Betts, but, you know, last year we knew who the number one pick was going to be. Year before, we knew it was going to be Caitlin Clark. Year before that, we knew it was going to be Aaliyah Boston. Like, we knew who the number one overall pick was going to be really going into March. Now, like I always said, legends make themselves known in March. Number one overall picks make themselves known in this year's March Madness. I do want to touch on, though, not just what we saw on the court, because we saw some great action on the court over the last couple of weeks, but also what we heard from UConn head coach Gino Auriemma. And we know, Gino is such an amazing ambassador for the sport. He spoke to the media about how to improve the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four experience. This is what Gino Auriemma had to say to the media.
Four for 20, four for 22, one for 17, five for 18, four for 16, seven for 26. That's the three-point shooting yesterday across the country. How many arenas are we going to sell out with that bullshit? You know what our time our shoot-around was yesterday? 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:20, I think. Does anybody who makes these decisions ever ask the coaches and the players, hey, does this work? Do you guys do this during the regular season? Is this normal? Total attendance yesterday at both places, 18,000. If we had four regions and you got a minimum 5,000 people, I mean, I went to Western State University. It's a great university. I think that comes out to 20,000. So what are we doing here? I just don't understand some of the decisions that are made about our game when we're trying to grow the damn game. Do you want to know the reason for these shooting percentages? I think they bring in new baskets, new basketballs right out of the box. Got people dribbling the ball off their feet. You got people missing layups all over the place. You bounce the ball and it goes up to the ceiling. There's just no concept of how basketball is played.
Okay, Jordan, your thoughts on that? You know, obviously, in the women's side of things, we have this year Sacramento and we have Fort Worth. We have two sites for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And for anybody that's new to the women's game, welcome. Happy to have you. Don't forget that on the women's side of things, you have host sites at home. So top four seeds get to host in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. You hit the road for the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then in the Final Four in the national championship game as at a separate site. The men's side has four different host sites, and that's kind of what Gino Auriemma is really campaigning for, is to expand this thing. Is that realistic? Do we need that in the women's game?
I don't know if we need it. I don't know. I mean, it's like a double-edged sword, because we talk about the home court advantage, and you really get a home court advantage being able to host in those first two rounds, and you have your fans come out and it's packed and it feels like a home game and they're rallying you through to the regional site and it feels cool. And then you have an example like Texas, where their regional site was just right down the road and it feels like a home game times four. Like, they have played at home throughout this whole tournament. Is that why they're beating everyone by so many points? Is that why they have looked so great? Maybe. I think they're just a really great team. But I think that it might have a little bit of an unfair advantage. But on the opposite side of that, when you have teams, you know, Sacramento is my hometown. And that first game, those first games there, I was so mad at my city. I remember I looked to my husband. I was like, did they not market this? Why is there no one there? Like, what is going on? And I was upset. And then I was reminded, like, oh, this is why we don't have multiple regional sites. And it hurts me to say, I don't know if the women's game is there yet, but we want to make sure that it's a real March Madness environment and experience, because that's what this is about. I think back to even when UCLA and Texas played early in like Vegas, and I was really excited about those games. And I looked out into the crowd and like not a lot of people were there because UCLA is really far away and Texas is really far away. So you're just kind of banking on women's basketball fans in Vegas kind of showing up for this one matchup. And it didn't have that environment, that feel that I was wanting to get from my TV screen. So half of it is you need to make sure that you're creating the environment. And I'm not sure if spreading out all the fans is the best way to do that. That's what I'll say.
It's tough. You know, it's tough. Like, I'm here in Fort Worth, and yesterday was, I believe, the biggest attendance that they've had for a game, which was about 11,000, and that was for the UConn-Notre Dame game. We know Husky Faithful is going to travel wherever. We could be playing in Timbuktu, and they'd show up and be packing the stands. It's honestly amazing.
They're loyal.
Like, yeah, it's honestly amazing. I like, you know, I think when I was in college, maybe I hated it because I'm just like, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Like, you know, they show up to Syracuse games in Huskies uniform. Like, what are we doing here? We're not even playing them, but you're showing up in their gear. Like, they just are so faithful. But on the same side, like, you know, today we had a game where it was about 9,000 that were in the stands. And it's a Monday. And so obviously that plays a factor into it as well, that people are working today. They couldn't, you know, extend their travel through the weekend and whatever. But it was all Texas. You know, Michigan had their one little family section right behind the bench, probably everybody's parents and grandmas. But otherwise, like, it just didn't seem like you could pull from both sides. And I think about the other teams that were in the region, like Louisville, still not very close to Dallas, you know? So you're getting the same thing, just the fan section. Our one seeds work very hard all year so that you are placed where you want to be, right? And you can kind of get that home court advantage. I just feel that by the time you're playing a game to go to the Elite Eight, I don't love home court being that event, being there. I just don't love it. It made me like, my heart hurt for Michigan today. Reasons aside from basketball, like before the game even started, because it's just like, yo, you really playing a road game. You're playing one of the hardest road games that you've actually played. Like the whole place looked burnt orange. So I understand what Gino is saying, and I respect Coach Auriemma because, one, he's been doing this for a long time. He has seen our game grow and change and the evolution of it very close, and he has been successful the entire way, so he knows what it looks like. I'm just wondering if we can get 11,000 fans in four different places. You know? Like, I hope we can. I actually hope that we are at the point where which we can do that, but it's a little scary in that, like, if it doesn't happen, then what? You know, if we still put these in close proximity and then it doesn't happen, and then what? Oh, the other thing is you can't control who gets to this point in the season.
Yeah.
You know, so like if someone had gotten upset, it could have been what? It could have been Michigan and Kentucky, and it just would have been empty in there. Because both teams just had their home sections. You know what I'm saying? Like, who knows? Who knows? So it's tough. But I understand what Coach Auriemma is saying. I want our game to grow. I think you've got to try it in order for it to grow. And we tried it years ago, as recent as 2015. And so maybe there's a stint in which our game has grown so much, which I believe it has, to where we could return to this to a format like the men that resemble the men. I actually still like that you should get home court advantage for the first two weekends. I just think by the time we 100%. Get to Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, we should just be in regions. You know what I'm saying? We should just be in regions. Yeah, that experience of like playing the NCAA tournament game at home and your campus being able to leave, you know, science class or whatever and pop over and watch games in the dome. Like, it was unreal when we experienced hosting the tournament at home. I like, that was one of my favorite experiences ever. So I think that needs to stay.
And it impacts games. Like, we saw Minnesota hit a buzzer beater to get to the Sweet 16 because they were at home. Does that game go differently if it's being played in Chicago, if it's being played in Sacramento and wherever? And that's what you have earned when you're a top 16 seed. That's what you've earned. You have the right to be able to play in front of your fans. I think it's better for the fan experience. It's expensive. If let's just, you know, go to the men's side of things. If you want to go to every single game that your team plays, let's say you are a fan of the Michigan men's team and you want to go watch them in the first two rounds and then you want to watch them in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and then the Final Four, that's expensive. That's flights, that's hotels. whenever you are able to keep things as close to home for as long as possible, and I'm with you, the first two rounds, like the Sweet 16 is reserved for something special and for something sacred, a neutral site that warrants that. But when you can keep it close to home, that's so much more advantageous for your fans to come to that game. And then it can also justify traveling for the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight because you're sleeping at home for the first two rounds, at least in theory. But I think you bring up a fair point. And look, we love this game, and sometimes you have to approach the things that you love with some brutal honesty, and it's fair to take a step back and say, are we there yet? Are we, as a women's college basketball society, ready for four different sites in the Sweet 16 and beyond? I think that you can look at it and say, okay, well, when you have four, then you're spread out. That means you're going to be closer, at least in theory, geographically, to the rest of the country. You're not going Sacramento and Fort Worth and two, you know, very spread out areas of the country, but also you're spreading out your fans. Mm-hmm. Is it 4,000 people in four different sites, or is it 11,000 people in two different sites? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I also like the part about earning a spot, I think, is still intriguing to me. And that's what makes it super interesting, because when you look down, you know, you can't control, like you said, you can't control how far a team goes and that proximity. But Texas knew that they could control their order of their number one seed. And them beating South Carolina in that SEC tournament, they knew that that would give them a better chance to play closer to home. So it's like that was an extra edge to maybe beat them in their conference tournament, because now South Carolina had to go all the way to Sacramento cross country. So that part made it very interesting. I don't know if it's always going to be that close, and I don't know if it's always going to come down to that, but that earning that spot to play closer because it just so happened to be in our state and down the street, it just kind of went your way. And to me, that's going to be a part of their story. If they go on to the championship game, if they go on to potentially win it, that's going to play a factor into the steps that got them there. So that's super interesting.
And sometimes the NCAA gods giveth and sometimes they take away.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you're forced to, like South Carolina, sometimes you're forced to go across the country, across three time zones to play wherever you need to play. And sometimes you get the luck of the draw, like Texas, and you get to play in your own backyard in front of 10,000, 15,000 of Longhorn faithful. Like sometimes you just get lucky in years that have been planned 5-10 years in advance. Yeah. Yeah. It's not so easy to say, oh, we don't want people playing in their backyard, so let's just change the site in the end of February. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I feel like also sometimes you just keep getting put in UConn's bracket, where if you're the 8th or 9th seed, you see them 3 out of the 4 years and you know that you're going to lose in stores every year. Like, what, you know, the committee is interesting. It's interesting. Like, there are two seeds in TCU who are in South Carolina, but not playing in TCU. How amazing would it have been if we saw TCU in Texas today? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That would have been incredible.
That would have been crazy.
No disrespect to Michigan.
Yeah.
But how crazy would it have been if we had just flip-flopped? You know what I'm saying? Michigan already in the middle of nowhere. It don't matter if they keep going. Well, like, you keep TCU here. For real, if we care about fans and we care about selling tickets, I hear that's the reason why the balls are different this time of year. Another conversation that's been crazy. Oh, every coach has been like, the balls are different.
Way too bouncy.
So when you're bouncing the balls, they're way too bouncy. And they are. They are. They are. It is actually like, I bought this ball from Dick's and I just pumped, my dad pumped it up and just threw it to me. Like, what's going on here?
Not in no good.
LOL. It has no give whatsoever. But I'm like looking at these balls up close. I'm like, why of all times did we decide to do that this time of year? You know, like, what is going on? So some of these things could make more logical sense. It could make logical sense to not put Syracuse in UConn's region every year. And it could make logical sense to keep a 2 seed that's in Texas playing in Texas. The 1 seed is also in Texas. Then you both have a home game. Then we actually have good basketball and good fans who pack the house.
NCAA in logical sense doesn't always go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. I used to be able to get a bagel without cream cheese. I remember.
Oh, God. Why?
Compliance.
You do it to yourself.
Compliance. That was the compliance rule. It would be like, for breakfast, we could get a bagel, but if we got cream cheese, it was I crossed the law. Nope. Suspended? I swear. I promise y'all. When I say I promise y'all.
Compliance was... Woo, I promise. That, what a time
Caroline,
that was.
I promise you. I could get a bagel and it would be okay for my team to give me a bagel. But if they gave us cream cheese, it would be a compliance issue. A compliance violation is the word I'm looking for. I am not lying to you.
I don't miss
you.
Those days.
And for those of you who are listening, I'm not old. I went to college between 2014 and 2021. This was recent.
Oh my gosh.
And now we have players driving G-Wagons and like in commercials. Like, wild how quickly things change. I had a coach tell me that he had to suspend players because they used his phone to call their parents, like, overseas. So he incurred, like, overseas fees on his phone bill, which was against NCAA rules. And now we have players that live in the same neighborhoods as their coaches and athletic directors. Oh, we went on a total tangent there. But, I mean, like, that is just how ridiculous some of these things are. But I do want to reel it in a little bit.
Okay.
Before we move on to before we officially turn the page to the Final Four and the national championship game, first, I want to reflect and I want to look back on maybe some of the stories or the games or the players that didn't get nearly enough love. So, Jordan, I will start with you. What is one story from or team or game or whatever it might be that stands out to you that you will never forget from this past year's tournament?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think they got a lot of love and probably mostly from me. But Virginia, oh my goodness. How fun was that, you guys? Like, we don't get that. We don't get Cinderella stories on the women's side. And to have a 10 seed go that far and be playing really great basketball, like all the way up until the last, like, 10 minutes, really. Like, they were in it with TCU. And I just started dreaming. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to play South Carolina and they're just going to be the first and the first and the first. And to come out of the first four team when I was talking about Arizona State, you know, they could be the Cinderella team and they wiped them out in the very first round to get all the way to this far. I mean, Kamora Johnson, her being a ball girl, growing up 2 miles away from campus. Like, I heard it 20 times and I will hear it. I want to hear it 20 more times. It was so easy to root for them because they played hard. They played together. They were playing with house money. They had nothing to lose. They were playing free and loose and just like totally playing their game. And, you know, when you hear those stories about roster having to be completely reconstructed and having transfers come in, it can always go good or really, really bad. Like, it's so wishy-washy. And for this to go this way and for them to make history, and it was just so fun. So I had a great time cheering for our first Cinderella story in like a really long time. I had a great time.
I love that.
That was the best.
It was
so great.
I feel like everyone in America was rooting for this story because we don't get that very often.
I know.
And yeah. I did ACC Media Days going back in like October, November, whenever, in the fall in Charlotte. So I got to interview all of the coaches, all the players. It was an absolute blast. And I was talking just off air with Kamora Johnson and several of her teammates. This was right after Virginia beat Florida State in football. And Virginia fans all stormed the field. It was a party on the field. So I was just asking them, did you do it? Were you there? How was it? And they were like laughing, hugging on each other, reliving old stories. They were just being best friends with each other. And I fell in love with them in that moment because they just had such a child, like just they were girls, you know, they were friends. They had this connection that felt so strong off the court. So I fell in love with them then. And then when it came to fruition in tournament time, it was like, yes, that makes sense. You have Kamora Johnson, who's an absolute dog, who led that team, was a spark plug for that team, and you also, at least I got to see their relationship off the court. It was so fun to watch that story, Ice.
It was. I was a fan of the Irish Cinderella. Because I still think that was a Cinderella.
For sure.
I'm telling you.
No, I had no idea. I did not think they were going to make it that far at all. Especially at the start of the season.
At all.
I was like,
at all. Oh, yeah.
I did pick Fairfield to beat Notre Dame in the first round of the tournament. Oops.
Hopefully that wasn't
nobody
because
got
of me.
The thousand.
Because that definitely was my talking point on the show.
I'm cracking up. Listen, it happens. You know, we have to make bold picks.
Oops.
It was a bold pick. It was a bold pick. It was less of Notre Dame. It was less that you thought less of Notre Dame and more that you thought very highly of Fairfield. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you made that pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll try to save you. But yeah, anyway.
Totally. No, I was just straight up wrong.
Straight up wrong.
Didn't believe in Notre Dame.
Man, it's like I feel that we have good coaches. We have great coaches in our game right now. I think Neil Ivey just inserted herself into a conversation at the very beginning of the conversation about her being one of the best coaches that we may see. Because what she did with that roster is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Gino could have done that with that roster. I'm not sure Kim Mulkey could have done that with that roster. Like, you could tell that she had the best game plan that fit her players, their style, and what they were able to do. The Fairfield game, yes, I think they were just like, we're just getting warmed up. 19-point win, handled that convincingly. I actually had them losing to Ohio State, which was a 3-6 game. I feel like Ohio State had the guards to compete with them plus the size, and I didn't think Notre Dame had it. They beat them by 10, even though Jelani Cambridge scored 40. They beat them by 10 at Ohio State. Like, they packed that house at Ohio State. And then the way in which they took out Vandy, y'all should have seen me. I was over here doing my little Irish dance, my little heel toe, whatever they do. Yo.
That was incredible.
Like, I root for my Jersey girls. And so, like, I just wanted to see great basketball. I wanted, like, Michaela Blakes and Hannah Hidalgo to just go at it. We saw clips of them playing AAU resurfacing before the game. And I'm like, oh, it's about to be drama. And Hannah is just the ultimate competitor. I don't know who we would compare her to in terms of, like, her mindset to, like, kill. And I say that knowing that, like, she doesn't like to be called the villain, but, like, she plays like the ultimate villain, like the villain we're all rooting for, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know, what movie were we all rooting for the villain? Training Day, maybe? But, like, we're really, you know, the villain that we were rooting for. Like,
of all movies, Training Day.
Denzel Washington. He's always at, like, the forefront of my mind. Legend. I'm so sorry. Exactly. But, like, man, I've never rooted for a villain more. But for her to have 30 points, the 11 rebounds, and the 10 assists, the 10 steals, the 11 rebounds, and the 31 points versus a number 2 seed in Vanderbilt, versus one of the best teams throughout the entire year, was crazy. Like, we talk about stars come out in March, like, for real, to me, she has been the biggest star. Because if we talk, like, when we do MVP conversations, Jordan, and we vote for the MVP, we always talk about, like, is it the person that's on the best team, is the best player on the best team, or is it the most valuable player on a team? Where if you took Asia Wilson out, they wouldn't even be close. You know what I'm saying? If you took Nafisa Collier out, they still would be close. Yeah. Like, if you took Hannah away from that Notre Dame team, they wouldn't even be in the tournament.
Oh,
not the fact close. That they got to an Elite Eight and was in a game with UConn where Gino was over there looking like, hold on. I've seen this before. We need to do something different. Where Sarah Strong had to get chippy and start talking trash was amazing to me. I love that she's coming. I love that she's a junior. I love that Neil Ivey is still young in her head coaching career. I feel like this was, like, the year where it was like, oh, no. I'm actually a very good coach. Not that I've had the best players. Not that I'm taken off of Muffet McGraw's system. I've got my own system. And this thing is working to perfection. And Hannah is, like, such a joy to watch. I think for any young player that wants to play basketball with passion and know what that looks like, you watch Hannah and you understand. There's just nobody playing with that level of determination.
Hannah is a superstar in every single definition of the word. She elevates her team. She makes everyone else better around her. Whenever Notre Dame needed momentum, whenever Notre Dame needed a shot, whenever Notre Dame needed anything, it was coming from Hannah. And it was coming at an incredibly high level. And it was coming from a space of, she's pissed off. and she's got something to prove. And that mentality in March, like, that's what I think largely carried Notre Dame to the point that they got was that mentality of it's us against the world. I have a chip on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. We all have a chip on our shoulder. I felt like the entire Notre Dame team kind of took on Hannah's persona. And that is a superstar. Mm-hmm. But one story that kind of stood out to me, I think that's a good jumping off point from Notre Dame to TCU. TCU is quickly, you know, cementing themselves, in my opinion, as transfer portal U. When you look at, Olivia Miles comes in, she's a star. And then the whole question all season long was, okay, Olivia Miles and TCU versus Hannah Hidalgo and Notre Dame, like, who's going to go further? Who's going to win this quote-unquote rivalry when they both ended up having great seasons? And then you look at Marta Suarez, who transferred in from Cal. You look at Clara Silver, who transferred in from Kentucky, three of their four leading scorers. We go back to last season. Haley Van Lith had this career renaissance at TCU. That Mark Campbell has just found a way to identify talent and get the most out of them in his system at TCU. They've been to back-to-back Elite Eights and two in their entire program's history. So if you are a player that doesn't feel like they're at home where they are, they're looking for a better opportunity elsewhere, they're looking for more opportunities, TCU's the place to go. And Mark Campbell's been proving that the last couple of years.
Yeah, and last season I called them the Pac-12 All-Stars because he just grabbed everyone from the Pac-12 as it was imploding and just put them all on a team. But I love that you say that about Mark Campbell, because in this era of the Wild Wild West of college basketball and NIL, where there's so many coaches who are, you know, fist in the air, rah, 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 I hate this system, I hate everything about it, he has embraced it and has really figured it out. And people are coming to him because of the money situation, the playing time, the everyone's role feels very defined. I just feel like in this era, you want to be the coach that has it figured out, where teams and players want to go, rather than, I hate this and it's not working out and I'm disgruntled over here. So he's figured it out, and it's been cool to see it unfold. He's made history as he's figured it out so far.
Heck yeah. You know he has a winning formula, because he's done the same thing back-to-back years with a different roster. Yeah. Like, that is impressive. We talk about Dawn and Gino and Kim being back-to-back-to-back years doing things with the same people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He had totally different people and got back to the same spot. I like Mark Campbell a lot. I feel like he's very humble, very about his work. And I like his system. I'm wondering who the next lethal point guard will be for him next year as we see Olivia Miles go to the WNBA. I know. Well, I'm like, that'll dreaming. Be a later pod like, conversation we'll have. Who's going to slide over to the Mark Campbell portal?
Producer Shelby, save that for a future topic. Who is going to be Mark Campbell's next standout transfer portal star? And that will be a fun little September topic for us here on the show. But that'll do it for us today here on Hoops 360. Obviously, we've got the Final Four going down on Friday. UConn in South Carolina, 7 o'clock Eastern time tip, followed by Texas and UCLA, a battle of the one seeds in the Final Four. Y'all, this is what we do it for. She is Ice Young, and she is Jordan Robinson. I am Caroline Fenton. We'll have instant reactions and breakdowns for y'all right here on yahoosports.com. And you, of course, can subscribe to Hoops 360 on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. And wherever you get your podcasts, we will see y'all next week.